I've lived in New Jersey my entire life, and I've been involved in lots of arts, acting, writing. I even married a musician. But a lot of people don't think New Jersey is known for arts and culture. Well, they're wrong. And my goal is to introduce everyone to the most talented people I know. They're singers, they're writers, they're musicians, they're actors, they're chefs, they're martial artists, they're everything you can imagine, and they're going to be on my show. Every one of them. Well, maybe not every one of them, but a lot of them. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey. Although Jim Joslin is a teacher in his music and drama school, and of course a business owner, he's really best known as a jazz guitarist and composer. In our conversation today, you'll hear some of his original music, including some from his latest two albums, in the background, as we talk about when he found his passion for music, how he's been able to actually navigate a real career in music, and whether or not cream really does always rise to the top. Well, and hello, Jim.
Hi, Lucille.
Let's start with something simple. Who are you?
Well, that's an interesting question, Lucille. Many things. Father, small business owner, boyfriend, musician, composer, teacher, human being living in New Jersey and succeeding and surviving every day.
Okay. Now, a lot of people spend their entire lives trying to figure out who they are. When did you figure out who you are?
Things happened early in my life that set the course for everything else that would take place. The story of me getting into music, which is really the way I've seen myself through life and the way I've fed myself and kept a roof over my head, is almost a tall tale or a fable. It seems surreal when I look back on it.
Yeah, I know. I read about how you got interested in musical instruments when you saw a guitar in Nogales, Mexico.
Yes.
Now, that made me think about how many kids don't get those kind of opportunities. You know, the fact that you were able to go on vacation with your family to a foreign country, and then your parents were able to buy you a guitar, that's great. I mean, I know I came from a home with six kids, and my cousin had a piano, and she hated taking piano lessons, and I used to just like, oh my God, that's a dream, if I could learn how to play the piano. How much impact did the fact that your family had the ability to act on your dreams give you the chance that other kids didn't have?
Oh, I'm sure it was everything. But yeah, in terms of being able to do these things, absolutely, sure. I mean, it's luck.
You studied at Mason Grove School of the Arts, which I believe began on the Livingston College campus, and that's where I attended Rutgers. And you studied with some of the same people that Jeannie did, Jeannie Bryson.
Oh, yes.
Kenny Barron, for example. Now, you've spoken about how effective a teacher Kenny was. How did that impact your decision to found the School of Music and Drama in Little Silver?
I don't know that going to school and learning from great teachers was an influence in me starting a teaching business. I know that everything that I learned there and so many things from my teacher, Ted Dunbar, are things that I teach my students now. I find myself saying things that Ted said to me, to them. So it's been probably more of an influence in how I teach than so much than my decision to teach. Mm-hmm. I started teaching when I was 19, years before I'd even gone to Mason Grove School of the Arts. A neighborhood friend asked me to help him get better at guitar. I started doing it. He gave me some money. And it was a very casual thing. And that was kind of my introduction to it. And right away, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed sharing it with him. And seeing how jazzed he got by the information and he realizing he would get better when he did the things I gave him. I enjoyed teaching right away. My enjoyment of it and making a business out of it probably was more of a factor than the schooling. But going to school there was an incredible impact on my life.
I don't know if you know Tony Cimarosi.
I do.
Yeah, Tony does a lot of teaching. So he's able to not have an outside job that is totally unrelated.
Well, I'm teaching a course at Brookdale now, the Intro to Music Business, and it's my second year teaching this class. And a big part of what I share with the students is the things that musicians do to make money. There is the top tier of writing, recording, and performing, and touring, the top however many 2% that make it to that level, and then everybody else. I've written books, I've had music of mine on television, I'm teaching at college, I teach private students, I perform professionally. All goes to the same thing. It's part of the career.
I just interviewed someone recently, a filmmaker, Doug Bollinger. He was sharing there are like three different ways that you can be an artist. You can do it as a hobby, you can do it part-time and do something else, like teaching or something else to supplement it, or you can just do it full-time. You have to make that decision at some point. What is it going to be?
there was a crossroads for me in all of it. I believe it was my junior year at Rutgers. I got a scholarship to a program at the Manhattan School of Music, a summer program for 2 weeks. I lived in a dorm at the Manhattan School of Music for 2 weeks. To make it in jazz especially, it I think requires living in New York City. I knew I couldn't live in the city. Just couldn't do that. I'm a small town guy, so it wasn't an option. Well, you mentioned my middle class upbringing before. I've gotten used to eating three times a day and living inside.
So. Exactly.
So.
So my husband, Gary Dates, I don't know if you know him. He's a musician.
I do.
The other night we were listening to a band and their original music, and we both agreed their lyrics were kind of lame. On the spot, I was making up new lyrics, and we both agreed my lyrics were better. I really think I could do well as a lyricist, but you have to have somebody to compose the music. So how does one go about finding someone to collaborate with?
Collaboration can come in a lot of forms. I think oftentimes the best time to find that is to just being on the scene, being out and going, hearing other people play, getting their cards, getting their information. Of course, now we have Facebook. I've written many songs with words as well, and I do find that to be the most difficult kind of thing to write.
You know, what I find with a lot of lyrics is that, yes, they rhyme, but it's like, come on, there's such predictable rhymes, and there's no poetry to it.
Well, I agree, and when I listen to the old standards from the American Songbook, some of them are trite and some of them are forgettable, but then some of them are masterpieces as well.
Yeah.
I think the time in our country where popular music was the most relevant and the most interesting was the mid to late 60s, early 70s, the Beatles, the Doors. This music is still relevant, still means something to me, and the words are fantastic.
And that's my generation. Back then, an entire album you listened to. You know, now it's like there's one cut that everybody loves.
I have a theory, the Beatles, the Doors, Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, these kind of groups, when you read interviews from them, you find out that their influences are the blues, jazz, classical music, and it's reflected in what they play. I think that has gotten watered down, and there's less and less and less of that. When you talk to people in their 20s now, they have no idea in large extent to any of that. They don't know about it.
So what do you think differentiates jazz aficionados from other music lovers?
In America, we have a interest in entertainment, and I don't necessarily think that's the same thing as an interest in music. Most popular music and most popular artists that I see today, when you do see reports about them, it's about their clothes or their scandals or their affairs or what they wear or what they eat, where they go. It's very often not anything about the music at all. There's a 18 or 19 year old kid practicing at Juilliard right now or in their mother's basement. That's music.
So your music, according to the critics, is traditional jazz blues. But you also have a group that plays Latin jazz funk. Why not a straight jazz combo?
We do play all those styles. We play some Latin jazz, some straight ahead jazz, some blues, some funky things. So I found it's good for promotional purposes to mention as many of them as possible, because one of them might be enough to get you the gig.
I often hear the joke about straight ahead jazz. You may have too. It's sometimes very long solos. It's similar to, say, let's say, masturbation. So how do you respond to that kind of observation?
Oftentimes the solos can be a bit long. I would concur with that. And certain players have more to say. You know, when John Coltrane took many choruses, it didn't ever feel like he was playing too long. Mm-hmm. There are some people, when you hear them go for that third or fourth or fifth chorus, they don't have anything new to say.
Yeah, I like to tease Tony Cimarosi about bass solos.
That's when people go to the bathroom or go up to the bar and get a drink.
I'm going to leave that in just for Tony. You know, most people feel they really know a lot about me, but I'm sure there are things about me that a lot of people, even my closest friends, don't know. What is something about you that people don't know or would be surprised to hear?
I think most people that know me wouldn't know that I can be a little volatile. Something I worked on as I've gotten older. I can be a bit of a hothead at times, especially when I'm watching the Jets.
So people don't usually talk about morality when it comes to music, but many musicians now speak out on issues that they feel need to be exposed. So what was the most morally difficult decision that you've ever had to make?
I do think that many artists now are speaking out about causes they believe in. And I think overall that's a good thing. I think it's good if people speak their mind and they have a belief in something. I think that sometimes perhaps it's not always sincere, and perhaps it's something they're doing more for a business that maybe they were told from a marketing person to, this is how you feel about this or that, perhaps. It is good to speak out about things. And if you can use your art as a platform to influence the world for the better, I think especially in these times.
Yeah, I know that Springsteen has done that. I mean, I'm not a big Springsteen fan, but I like his moral stances, so.
Amen.
Gary and I sort of have the opposite approach to dealing with aging. And maybe because I'm an optimist and he's more of a pessimist. Gary dreads aging. He's afraid of dying. And I, on the other hand, I love to look back on my life and think about all the kind of treasures of all the years that I had and the memories. When I was a kid, I used to read in the newspaper, you know, 25 years ago this happened. I think, oh, I can't wait till I can remember something from 25 years ago. So I still feel like I'm not afraid of dying. What about you?
I'm not afraid of that. I don't give that much thought. As we get older, you know, there are days you wake up and you have pain and you don't know why, obviously. That's not fun, but I just try to really live in the moment as much as I can, the here and now, and be present in the moment. I find when I do that, I'm more successful. I enjoy myself more. I have more fun. So I try not to look too far ahead or too far back.
Of course, I've been asking you all these really kind of deep questions, but let's talk about your music. What's the favorite your favorite composition that you've created?
Well, if I had to pick one, I wrote a suite, a Brazilian suite, many years ago. And the second section of that is a classical guitar piece that I've recorded. It's probably the most complex piece I have. I would say that one is my favorite composition. It's not a jazz piece at all. It's a fully composed classical guitar thing. When I wrote it, I sort of had an idea of the harmony, and it was one of those instances where I was writing it and I was just trying to keep up with the pen, it felt like. The idea was just...
Like automatic writing?
It felt like it was writing itself.
Yeah.
That happens, but it's not often. And in this piece, I think it really worked out well.
What's the name of that song?
Brazilian Suite Part 2.
Let's listen to a little bit of that now.
A friend of mine has a company where he sells different products for music, and one of them is a poster with advice for guitar playing technique and things that you can do on guitar. I wrote a book on that. It's done quite well. I mean, far, far better than I ever would have thought. It's a neat idea. I enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
I think it's a neat way to play, and he sold a lot of these posters all over the world.
Oh.
So he's done really well with it. But
great. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would that be?
One thing, I would just be more patient. Be more patient with things. Sometimes I can be hot-headed and a little quick to temper.
Does that happen to you when you're playing?
Well, sure. Yeah, sure.
Now, you know, you mentioned your school before, and it's not just a music school. It's also a drama school. Talk to me about that.
It was adding something to our program. It adds value as well to have, you know, two different disciplines to study. And it's been great. It's been a really nice addition over the years to the school. Music lessons are for all ages.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you teach violin?
Yeah, we teach all the instruments.
I bought myself a violin because I always wanted to learn how to play it. It's really hard to teach yourself.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Especially when you have nails.
Yeah.
So what do you want your legacy to be?
I would like to leave behind the music. You know, I've written a lot of original music, and you know, from a business standpoint of someone, you know, playing gigs, it's harder to do that. You know, most people want to, if you're going to play at all, they want to hear the same old tunes.
The standards, yeah.
The standards. So when we play, it's mostly that. You know, the original compositions are what I'm most proud of.
Do other people play your music?
In my last lesson with Pat Martino, we played a number of my original tunes, and one of them, Black Silk Flowers, he was so enamored with it, he wanted a copy of the sheet music for himself. Ah. And I always held out hope that he might record that one day, but no.
So often, I don't know, do songwriters get screwed?
I imagine many have, yes. Well, I know with me, you know, licensing the music for sync, as they say, right, for television or film or advertising, you know, if that's show business, Lucille, that's probably the lowest rung of show business, you know.
Yeah.
You're not credited, and in some cases, you're not paid well. I would imagine, I've talked to some other friends in licensing, and I know music of mine has been on about 40 or so television shows, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were 10 or 12 or 15 other shows that used the music and I didn't get credited or paid at all.
Paid,
so,
yeah.
You know, I think, yeah, it's...
See, what you need to do is get in on a commercial.
Yeah. Well, I've had some things on a couple commercials, you know, and been paid well for what I've been notified mm-hmm. about. But yeah, I think there is that, especially in anything now. The machine is not set up for the artist.
Yeah.
It's set up toward the machine and the corporation.
Right. And now people think music should be free. Who pays for music anymore?
Right. Well, when you see that, you know, huge artists are getting some percentage of a penny for stream through Spotify and these types of things.
Yeah. Millions of streams and you get 17 cents. Yeah.
Exactly.
If you want to be an artist, it's almost like you can't want to make money at it.
The art, maybe it shouldn't, that shouldn't be the first thought, you know.
Yeah.
I know one of my pieces of music that has been used for licensing, it was on two television shows and a commercial. It was not written for commerce. It was written to satisfy me. It was an artistic piece,
yeah.
A Brazilian samba with many, many chord changes, a complex piece of music. I sent it for licensing, and it was used in those three different circumstances, and I made a lot of money from it, but I did not write it for that goal.
Yeah. Well, it's like Gary is also a photographer.
Beautiful.
When he first started, he was just doing it because he liked it. He started getting all these awards, and then he started like thinking too much about
right.
what he had to do. And first of all, he lost the joy of it. And he also right. felt that he lost the artistic flair that he had.
Right. Well, some people, they say, I have a dance school or a music school, but I'm not really in it for the money. Those things are businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And you can provide a great service with great value and do a great job for people, but still also get fairly compensated
sure.
for your time and effort. Those two things aren't mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, you know, if you think about it, I mean, you know, true art, the cream rises to the top.
Mm. Although there was an interesting debate on NPR, and they were talking about Picasso. Quite honestly, the reason Picasso was known as a great artist is because Metropolitan featured his art and pushed his art and told everybody he was a great artist.
Mm.
But, you know, what do you think about that? Like, is it really the cream that rises to the top, or is it the cream that gets recognized, that gets pushed to the top? I mean, because really, is Bruce Springsteen the best musician around?
Well, I wouldn't say that, no.
Yeah.
I think there's a little luck involved, and I think you can have promotional vehicles behind you, like you said. So it's how much is invested in an artist, how much money is put behind promoting that artist, you
mm-hmm.
know? A lot of those things come into play.
We've actually come to the last question here. We've always been told that you have to find your passion. And the thing that bothers me about that advice is that it leads people to believe that everyone has an obvious passion, or they should. But what I've discovered is that you find your passion by trying different things. You try something, it doesn't really click, you try something else. But that's not the kind of advice people are given. They're saying, find your passion, but they don't really give them advice on how to do it. You found your passion at a pretty young age, but what kind of advice can you give to people who don't really know what their passion is or what it could be?
Question everything and have an open mind. Try new things, like you said. Try something once. You don't know what you're good at and what you might really enjoy.
Yeah, it's not the violin for me.
You'd have to cut your nails. So that...
and take lessons. Yeah. Well, Jim, thanks so much for your time. This was great.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I love the arts and I love to talk. And that's why I'm talking to local artists. And if you like listening, then subscribe to my podcast. You can do it on this page, on iTunes, or anywhere you get podcasts. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey.